Finovate showcases cutting-edge banking and financial technology through a global conference series featuring short-form demos and thought leadership. Now, the conversation continues on the Finovate podcast.
We're going to kick off today with an Analyst 360 session where I'm going to be talking with our own analyst, David Penn. David, go ahead and come on out here onto the stage. You've been an analyst now with Finovate for a number of years, and when we got to Finovate Europe in 2020, our editors at FinTech Futures had this idea. They wanted to give us all a prompt. Where is FinTech going in the next 10 years? So they gave this question to yourself, to our other research analyst, Julie Moon, and me, and we wrote three wildly different articles, which you would expect with a prompt that broad. Sure. And what we'd like to do is talk through some of those highlights from those pieces. And again, these are all, by the way, available in the publication at the FinTech Futures booth out there in the hall. So, the next decade in FinTech, we had very different takes. So let's start with Julie's. Julie is back home, by the way, in the United States with her small child, was not able to make the trip. But she chose to write about PSD2, how that's unfolded, and how it's going to change things going forward. What were the big pieces that stood out to you about what Julie had to say?
Yeah, Julie Moon's piece, which again you'll find in the FinTech Features supplement. I know it's around the corner if you haven't picked it up. She sort of did a second birthday celebration for PSD2, sort of taking a look at how far things have come and where things might be going with regard to that. I think the main takeaway that she had was that it did, in some respects, help at least set the pace for some of the things that people had hoped in terms of driving innovation for fintechs, for financial institutions, and for challenger banks in particular. It's provided sort of a shot in the arm for sort of the API economy, the sort of the API movement as well. One of the things she did point out is it's still very, very early. It's only 2 years in. You still have issues of adoption. Compliance rates, in some respects, are not as high as some people might have preferred them to be. I know 41% was a number that I'd seen in terms of compliance with PSD2.
Which is shocking, by the way.
But again, 2 years in. Also, the awareness among the public in terms of what's going on is not as what you'd expect. But again, I think you're talking about something that's been started two years in. It's very heavily regulatory. It's not necessarily something that you're hearing top of mind all of the time. So I think while maybe the adoption rate's not as aggressive as some would have preferred, I still think that at least her analysis seems to suggest that we're still very much on track in terms of seeing what that's going to be able to do for us.
Yeah, well, I know it's been funny from our standpoint, obviously, when we first heard about PSD2, it was sort of presented from the context of, oh my God, look at what we have to do now, right? There's this crazy new regulatory framework that we have to try and abide by. We saw immediately after this kind of a rash of demos across the Finovate stage of companies who basically were saying, we can help you become compliant, which is kind of what you'd hope the innovators would do, how they would respond to something like that. But I think now we're starting to sort of see the other side of the coin. This is the positive side of it. It's not necessarily something that's just as onerous. And one of the things that really struck out to me, Julie's suggestion that the European payments market can scale more easily and faster than other regions, and industry participants will be able to compete on a global scale a little bit more now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think like any other business, challenger banks, for example, taking advantage of open banking, thrive on access. And to the degree that you can open up businesses now using, for example, this little open banking model, challenger banks, you can open up in the sea, in Eastern Europe, and end up having customers over in the UK, for example, is a tremendous accelerant, I think, to the business. So I think the capacity for businesses taking advantage of open banking to scale within Europe, I think, is very significant. One of the things we find, not specifically in Europe, but, for example, in Singapore, there was a recent discussion that many of the folks who are taking advantage of Singaporean challenger banks aren't going to be people living in Singapore. And I think that's an example of the capacity to scale with some of these technologies and some of these regulatory shifts. To that point, I would think that one of the things also that's interesting about PSD2 is the way that it's also enabled or sort of, again, reinvigorated areas within fintech, such as RegTech, which is, I know, an area that a lot of folks find somewhat maybe not as exciting, not as sexy as others. But I know in Singapore we just had a show, and some of the RegTech things we were seeing from there and some of the energy that a lot of companies were putting into really really making it easier for folks to be compliant was something I think was very, very impressive and very, very necessary, because a lot of these folks aren't going to be able to do it on their own, shouldn't do it on their own. And to the degree that we can have innovators working in these areas and finding ways to make it easier for fintechs to be compliant while they can go ahead and focus on the things that make them worthwhile, I think is a really, really significant development.
Yeah, well, and there's a piece now, obviously challenger banks have come up a couple of times already, and this is seems kind of a natural transition point into what you wrote about, which was kind of the rise of challenger banks. And you know, you called it, I think, the hottest theme in fintech right now, particularly in Europe. And I think, you know, it would be a stretch to say that PSD2 has been the primary enabler there. But you know, what factors do you think have contributed to the surge of challenger banks out there in addition to PSD2?
Yeah, well, I certainly think it's worthwhile giving PSD2 its due with regard to challenger banks. I mean, the open banking opportunity really does help set a lot of that in motion. But at the same time, I don't think it's all surprising that we find similar neobank, challenger bank phenomenon happening all over the place. It's almost why don't you have a challenger bank movement, whether you're talking about folks who are unbanked and trying to access them, whether you're simply talking about younger folks, for example, who are mobile native or digital native, who simply find it more comforting to work in these sort of ways, with the same way they interact with Amazon and shopping and other sorts of things, as well as, quite frankly, folks who are put off by traditional banks in the wake of the financial crisis, which is something that we don't talk as much about now, that we all sort of feel that we're back on our feet. But as we're seeing in some of the political ripples around the world, there's still quite a bit of that, I think, that's still lingering in the human system. And I think one of the things that challenger banks, at least to some degree, is help give people an alternative to going back to some of those places that they've lost quite a bit of confidence in.
Yeah, well, and I think you see, to your point, why don't you have one, I think, is a really good way of thinking about it. And but now we're seeing this become this massive wave. There's a huge number of challenger banks coming out. Are we becoming oversaturated now with challenger banks? I mean, it just seems like there's way too many to even keep track of them all. And obviously, people can differ on how they define what a challenger bank really is. Mm-hmm. But do we reach a point at some point where the market can't possibly support all of them?
Certainly, there will be such a point, but I definitely respect the idea of oversaturation. I was sitting out earlier to write a piece about challenger banks, and I was going to go to the top 10 challenger banks in Europe, the top 10 challenger banks in the CEE, the top challenger banks in Germany, because it was just so many, and it just became that much easier to just narrow it down, as I really got a sense of the scope. I do suspect that, again, with most businesses, that you're going to have to reach that point of oversaturation before you know that you're oversaturated. So I think that to this point, I'm sort of in a 100 flowers bloom kind of mode with regard to really letting this sort of thing run and just see what folks can do. At the same time, you're finding some... out of counter trends is exactly the right word. I know there was a news report, I think it was yesterday, about N26 and issues they were having with UK accounts and some of the decisions they were making there. So while you have a certain oversaturation perhaps in certain areas, you're also seeing sort of this retrenchment as, for example, in the case of Brexit, you're having some of these banks say, well, maybe this is not a market that we're going to be able to take advantage of as we had planned to. So I think you're going to have sort of a push-pull between those two factors.
Yeah, and no, I would tend to agree. Now, one of the other pieces, other sides of this equation you wrote about was the amount of VC funding going into the space. It's been massive, for the huge amount of venture capital going into it. Is the amount of VC funding going into this sustainable?
Well, one thing that, I think both in terms of with challenger banks and their funding that they're getting from VCs, as well as just funding in general, we are super saturated in capital. As a global economy. There's a lot of money sloshing around the world, chasing after a lot of stuff. So the sustainability of it, in terms of the capital being available, I don't see that changing anytime soon. Central banks, everybody's got it floored. The money is flowing out there, chasing every possible opportunity for returns. So at least in that respect, I don't think the challenger banks are going to suffer from the taps all of a sudden turning off. What I found most interesting, what I'm sort of looking forward to hearing more about over the course of the conference, is that transition from, okay, you have the capital that you need to do the work that you do, how can we make you a better business? How can we help you fine-tune your business model or even find new aspects of your business model that are going to allow you to differentiate yourself from your competitors and thrive as a business? Once we sort of got you up and running, you've got the money to do what you need to do, what's going to help you actually really become a very, very good business as opposed to just one of a number of businesses doing the same sort of thing?
Yeah, so the expertise potentially more valuable valuable even than the capital from the venture capital community coming into challenger banks?
Certainly as a port. I'm certainly not going to shortchange the change.
Right.
but I do think that's always, for me, it's always been the interesting thing is you've got the money, you've got the resources to get you up and running. How do you excel? How do you differentiate? And what role can venture capitalists play? Folks with experience, the mentoring, what role does that play in really driving banks that are receptive, challenger banks that are receptive to it, leaderships that's receptive to it, to really make those changes that are going to help them separate from the pack?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's kind of the place where I'd like to end, and we're about out of our time here, but what's going to determine who ultimately wins in this space with all of this competition that's out there?
I do think it's going to be the business model. I think one of the things I think it'll be really worth listening for and keeping an eye out for is what are some of the crazy things that these banks end up doing? And I deliberately say crazy because it's going to be some of these aspects and features and things that they're going to offer that we might not expect that are going to be the things that might catch on and help, again, that bank separate itself from its rivals.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you very much. We'll be airing this podcast as soon as we can. For those of you who are here, thank you for being here and participating in the conversation. For those of you listening online later on, thank you for tuning in to the Finovate podcast. Let's have a round of applause for David.
Yep, thank you.
The Finovate podcast is produced by Informa Connect in association with Provoke.fm Media. Check out Finovate.com for information on Finovate's upcoming shows and to learn how you can get involved. The discount code Finovate Podcast will save you 20% on tickets to all of our events. And you can email us at info@finovate.com for information on sponsoring, speaking, or demoing. Thanks for listening.